Welcome to the Freedom Report, broadcasting from Alexandria, Virginia. Welcome to the Freedom Report. I'm your host, Austin Peterson. Who's Austin Peterson?
Liberty champion Austin Peterson, this Justin Bieber lookalike, and a powerful advocate for liberty.
Who's Austin Peterson? I'm an American. I love life, liberty, and family, but I'm not a conservative. I'm a hardcore libertarian. What am I doing here? I'm trying to restore the republic. The Libertarian Republic is a website aimed at furthering the ideas of economic freedom and personal liberty. I don't really care about parties. All I care about are ideas. And the one idea I care the most about? Freedom! That's right, pure freedom on the Freedom Report podcast.
Welcome to the Freedom Report. First, a message from our sponsors. The Libertarian Republic is brought to you in part by Amagi Metals. Amagi Metals is TLR's trusted metals dealer, and their mission is to help simplify the buying process of metals while illuminating the importance of financial responsibility and sound money. So, if you've been thinking about getting into metals, go to AmagiMetals.com and check them out. That's AmagiMetals.com.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Report. Today is Thursday, March 27th, and I'm here with a very special guest, Jack Hunter. Jack, welcome back to the show.
Good to be with you, Austin.
I'm also here with my co-host, Ian the Intrepid Hewitt. Ian, welcome
back. I like it.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to talk about a little bit about foreign policy and specifically what's going on with a certain woman by the name of Jennifer Rubin, who has a, quote, Rand Paul obsession. If you aren't familiar with Jennifer Rubin, because you don't read the Washington Post, Jennifer Rubin is the arch neoconservative who is out there in the media attacking Rand Paul, it seems like, almost every single day. I read the Washington Post every morning, and sure enough, what do I see every time I open it up? But Rand Paul sucks, Rand Paul's weak, somebody's better than Rand Paul's stupid. Who is this Jennifer Rubin, Jack, and why should we care?
She is the archetype of what a neoconservative is, I would say. You know, here's somebody who, first and foremost, cares about an aggressive interventionist foreign policy abroad from the United States. You know, I always say that the opposite of libertarian is more accurately described as authoritarian. Mm-hmm. Boy, does she love executive power. Does she love a national security agency that's completely unlimited in its authority? That's a pretty good description of what she is. And obviously, Senator Paul is the antithesis of all those things. He wants to see a more restrained and prudent and common sense foreign policy. He wants to see the Fourth Amendment perspective as well as the rest of the Bill of Rights. That's not where she's at all. So obviously, she beats him up on a daily basis. A columnist for Rare.us, where I work, Matt Palumbo, is somebody who works with statistics and numbers. He does lots of things in that area. So he ran the numbers on Jennifer Rubin's columns for the month of March, for at least the first 3 weeks, and she mentioned Rand Paul 143 times.
Gee, Christmas.
The only person that was mentioned more is President Obama 206 times. And just to give you some context, other than the 143 times that Rand Paul was mentioned, the second line was Vladimir Putin at 87, and I think Ted Cruz was 59. Uh-huh. So she obviously is putting a lot of focus on Rand Paul for a lot of the reasons I just explained.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because Jennifer Rubin, she's a columnist of the Washington Post, but her home is the Free Beacon, right? The Washington Free Beacon?
I don't think so. Obviously, you know, the Free Beacon is a neoconservative outlet, mm-hmm, as well, and I'm sure there's some incestuousness there, ideologically, I mean. But that she writes primarily at the Washington Post, her right-turn blog. She's sort of the token conservative, which a lot of conservatives, everybody from Eric Erickson to Mark Levin, are not fans of her.
I liked what Erickson said. Reasons. He said that Jennifer Rubin has nothing in common with conservatives except that she hates terrorists.
That's right, and that's back when she was sort of lobbying, as Erickson put it, for Mitt Romney during the last election.
Right. So obviously, the reason why we're talking about foreign policy is because of what's going on in Crimea, the what I call the Russian military invasion. There was a referendum that was held, and this is sort of exploded in the libertarian world. We have a lot of infighting that goes on anyway, Ian. But there have been columns written by prominent libertarians, people like Alexander McCobin, who is disagreeing with Ron Paul. Ron Paul says Crimea secedes. So what? Alexander McCobin says, I like Ron Paul, but I don't agree with him that this is a secession, because Alexander McCobin basically is seeing this as an illegitimate secession, really an annexation. Then we have Justin Raimondo at antiwar.com coming out and flinging poo back at Alexander McCubbin. Can you tell me exactly, like, what do you see is going on, Ian? Why do you think we've got this sort of split over foreign policy? Where are the misunderstandings coming in, and what's your take on this whole situation?
Well, like Jack, I liked a piece Anthony Gregory wrote against the libertarian Cold War.
Anthony Gregory is a writer at the Independent Institute, if you don't know.
And he really emphasized it's a disagreement about emphasis. Most libertarians are disagreeing on whether we should emphasize our opposition to Russian intervention and use this opportunity to make it clear we're against any intervention, not just American, or whether it's more important to just emphasize American intervention and maybe be concerned that harping on Russian intervention too much could promote hawkishness.
Now, that's right.
There are groups on each side that explicitly, in one case, defend Putin's actions, and explicitly, in the other case, call for American intervention. And Gregory identifies this and says, these two groups aren't representative of most of us. Most of us are in the middle, and right. We're disagreeing about emphasis.
That's right. So just to recap here what Ian is saying. So Anthony Gregory, who writes a fantastic column that you all should read, he writes about the two factions of people. One that say, yes, pro-Putin, you know, he's absolutely right in what he does. He has a right to do this. Those people are not libertarians. And then the people who say that it's the job of the United States to intervene over there, the United States government intervene, those people are not libertarians either. But what the problem comes down to, and Jack, I'd like to get you to weigh in on this, is that it seems as if, you know, if someone comes out in opposition to what Ron Paul says on foreign policy, or even criticizes his tone on this, then the sort of the pejorative that's flung around is neocon, you know. And when I think of neocon, I think of Bill Kristol, I think of Jennifer Rubin,
right.
I think of Wolfowitz and Pearl and stuff like that. But just because I express, you know, my care about what happens overseas, that doesn't make me a neocon, does it?
Right. This long before the situation with Putin and Ukraine and Crimea happened, it's been a pet peeve of mine that libertarians in particular would use neocon and sort of stretch. You know, they would use that term to describe Republicans they disagree with on like marijuana policy or.
Or Monsanto.
Immigration. Anything. Yeah. Anything. That person's a neocon. No. A neoconservative is a very specific thing. It relates to foreign policy and what I call, you know, authoritarianism as it relates to NSA. They are for a very strong central government that has lots of money to police the world.
Uh-huh.
That's what a neoconservative is. It's people like Jennifer Rubin. It's people like Bill Kristol and Max Boot, going back to Irving Kristol, his father. That's who neoconservatives are. In Congress, it would be people like John McCain and Lindsey Graham. Marco Rubio, they are neoconservatives because they have that sort of ideological worldview about America's role in the world. We need to police the world. A neocon is not somebody who's simply on the right who you disagree with.
Mm-hmm.
That is a very different thing. And if everybody we disagree with is a neocon, then the term loses its meaning. It's the same thing with terms like racist or socialist. You know, if everybody's a socialist, because you then it means nothing. If everybody's a racist, then it means nothing either.
Right.
I think we have to be more particular when we use these terms.
Here's a story for you that you guys have never heard. Nobody's ever heard this story before, and I'd like to talk to you guys about it because I think it'll spark an interesting debate. But when I was working at Fox News, we had a guest on every once in a while, a guy by the name of Ambassador John Bolton.
Right.
And
he's a neoconservative.
He's a neocon.
Right.
Right, and I think we all can appreciate that. But you know what? John Bolton actually called himself a libertarian. And you know what's funny about that is, here's the story. So I was walking down the hallway one day, and then the judge was running after me. He's like, Austin, you'll never believe what happened. I go, what happened, Judge? He's like, John Bolton wants to be on our show. He wants to be on Freedom Watch. He wants to tell me how libertarian he is. And I was like, what? Has he been smoking something? I guess he is libertarian.
Right.
But
it's telling that within the Republican Party, everyone wants to identify
right.
as libertarian and
yeah.
say, you know, I'm actually pretty libertarian. That's happening across the board.
Well, here's
that speaks to our successes.
It does. And here's the funny thing about it is that when I actually had a chance to sit down and pre-interview, Ambassador Bolton, we started talking about issues. I was like, so he's like, because he wanted to be on to show how libertarian he was. And we started talking about the war on drugs. Well, he wants to scale it back. We started talking about welfare. He's against it. We started talking about other domestic issues, which libertarians would all agree on. John Bolton is a libertarian on all of these issues, except for the issue of force, military force overseas, and America's role in the world.
Right.
So the lines really do start to get blurred. Even when you call someone like Ambassador John Bolton a neocon, you have to understand that someone like a neoconservative is actually more of a cousin to a libertarian than someone of a far relation to. Because here's the thing, I'll let you get it in a second. But libertarians like to paint neoconservatives as the absolute polar opposite of libertarianism, and that happens all the time, and you won't find many libertarians who disagree with that. But the reality is that neoconservatives don't see themselves as that way. And when you look at their domestic issues, it's hard to disagree with them. What do you say, Jack?
Well, neoconservatives within their own ranks are as diverse as libertarians, as we're seeing this week and almost every week of our existence, people bickering with each other.
Uh-huh.
Neoconservatism applies specifically in a modern context to things like foreign policy and civil liberties. A guy like John Bolton, his specialty as an ambassador, what you know his mm-hmm. career's been about, is international affairs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fair to call him a neoconservative. That's his specialty, despite the fact that personally, he mm-hmm. might be libertarian on all these other issues.
Yeah.
He's recognized for talking about these foreign interventionism, and a strong
right.
executive branch to sort of carry out things that libertarians disagree with. So it is completely fair to call him a neoconservative based on that issue.
What
I have a problem with is when people call somebody a neoconservative just because they're on the right and they disagree with them on any issue.
Mm-hmm. It's a matter of political philosophy, I think, of the mm-hmm. underlying political philosophy. Objectivists, for example, tend to be interventionists. I'm a non-interventionist, but I do think we can say objectivists are libertarians.
Right.
They have libertarian positions on other issues, and their interventionism is about preemptively eliminating threats, and that's it. Neoconservatives, in their political philosophy, and this is why they're sometimes associated with the left, have a very utopian view and think it's possible to bring about the end of evil and to create a peaceful, democratic world where mm-hmm. just sort of everything has been perfected and perfectly engineered. So that position, I think, can't be reconciled with libertarianism because it requires the endless expansion of government and mm-hmm. an endless role for the U.S. in policing the whole world.
I would add to that, too, just from a basic limited government, Barry Goldwater, Ronald Reagan conservative perspective, that neoconservatism is incompatible with that in this sense. If you think that it's worth being in Afghanistan for 10 or 20 years, mm-hmm. as these neoconservatives do, or we should have stayed in Iraq, that maybe we should have boots on the ground in Iran, that we should be in the Ukraine or Georgia 3 years ago, or if you think that that's what America should do all around the world, police world, have that costs a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the $1 trillion we spent in Afghanistan and Iraq is about the same price tag as Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
And can we afford Obamacare? No, we cannot. Can we afford to have the same foreign policy we've had and the foreign policy the neoconservatives would like us to continue to have? We can't. If you're a fiscal, just mainstream conservative, that's a contradiction that's existed within the conservative movement for too long. You know, conservatives keep electing conservative Republicans, allegedly, and they look around, the government's bigger than ever. The national debt's at its highest point ever. Who did that? Republicans who also wanted that sort of neoconservative vision. They are incompatible. We need the strongest military on earth. We can have that in the age of austerity, spending a lot less money, be as strong as we ever were,
mm-hmm.
without trying to police the world. Neoconservatives are completely opposed to that.
Mm-hmm.
They do have a very liberal view. From my point of view, Wilsonian liberal view about what America's able to accomplish in the world.
Well, this might blow your mind here, but another thing that Ambassador John Bolton told myself to my face and to the judge's face was that although he was an ambassador to the United Nations, he thinks that we ought to shut the United Nations down and kick him out of the country. And Ambassador Bolton, specifically when I was talking to him about foreign policy, really started to make me think and question, because he was saying basically if we have these institutions, he's being like more pragmatic perhaps than myself, if we have these institutions, if we have the threat of international terrorism, if we have these problems of belligerent nations overseas, if we have the problem of a potential nuclear Iran, if we have the problem of a nuclear North Korea, which is an actual threat, a real threat that we have to counter, then his foreign policy of neoconservatism, that we would call it, is one based of realism and world affairs. So you and I, we like to talk about realism. Rand Paul talks about realism.
On the United Nations in particular, it's funny to me that, 20, 30 years ago, to get the U.S. out of the U.N. was a hard right grassroots thing.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of the neocons of that time wanted to be a part of the U.N. We need international deployment. That was sort of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
But post-Bush, the sort of go-it-alone attitude, I don't care what anybody thinks of going to Iraq anyway. Oh, well, now we don't like the U.N. anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's bad. At the end of the day, they want the ability of America to intervene where they think we should intervene, which is basically everywhere.
Right.
And they don't want the UN getting in the way. It's very different.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's pragmatic because, to guard against a threat from North Korea, for example,
mm-hmm.
it would have been helpful to have missile interceptors in Alaska. President Obama canceled those a few years ago. We would have had them at this point and
mm-hmm.
be on guard against a North Korean threat, or at least more so than we are today.
Mm-hmm.
But where did all that money go? Obama's not light on military spending. He's spent, more than any president since World War II. Where it's gone is we have troops in 135 countries and 10,000 troops in Britain and in Italy. we don't have money for a strong, pragmatic, realist national defense because we're busy trying to make everyone like us.
You know, I watched a really interesting segment by Bill Maher a couple of weeks ago when he was talking about Donald Rumsfeld. He was considering the new documentary film out that's about the known unknowns by Errol Morris. And basically, Bill Maher gave some credibility to Rumsfeld compared to the Cheney and Bush neocons, because Rumsfeld, when they asked Rumsfeld, whether or not Iraq was a good idea, Rumsfeld's response specifically was, "Time will tell." He didn't say, "Oh yeah, absolutely, it was a great idea. Going into Iraq was a good idea." Rumsfeld said, "Time will tell."
Like Cheney would have just unequivocally defended it.
So I think that we have this knee-jerk response to neoconservatism. It's us. It's our racist. You know what I mean? But I think the problem is that we don't understand neoconservatives as libertarians a lot of times.
I think some of us don't, but I think enough of us do.
Well, a lot of us do, but maybe the elite, maybe the insiders do. But as a broad movement, we as libertarians, I don't think we've studied our enemies close enough.
Well, I would say that Donald Rumsfeld should have said, "Time has told." Mm-hmm. I think that the Iraq invasion was arguably one of the dumbest foreign policy decisions in American history. And as conservatives or libertarians or just people with common sense, if you can't apply a cost-benefit analysis to something like the Iraq War, and look at what we knew or thought we knew going in and what was the reality of the situation once we got there and what's happened here, you know, a decade removed from it, if you think that was a good idea, would have done the same thing knowing what we know now. Time is told. We mm-hmm. know that was a bad idea. Mm-hmm. The telling thing is that the neoconservatives, as Ian pointed out, people like Dick Cheney, still defend that tooth and nail. Mm-hmm. If you think that that would be a good idea to redo Iraq all over again, mm-hmm. you would not fit to hold public office in this country, in my opinion. The neoconservatives believe that with all of their heart.
Yeah.
And I don't want them anywhere near the White House. I don't want them in Congress.
Me either.
And I think as libertarians or conservatives, we should fight that tooth and nail.
Me either. But I got to jump in here because I got to throw something at you. And I'm playing devil's advocate, mm-hmm. you understand. I'm not arguing for these people's positions. But, you know, we had Donald Rumsfeld on the show. I've got a file back here that I used to do the, you know, we called it a hit piece at the time. But now I actually gained a bit more respect for Donald Rumsfeld because we talked specifically about an accusation that is always flung at Donald Rumsfeld about the weapons, quote-unquote, weapons of mass destruction that supposedly were sold to Saddam Hussein that he used to gas the Kurds, right? Well, the accusation that libertarians and leftists and people who are enemies of the neocons always fling at Donald Rumsfeld is that, you know, we allow these weapons to be sold. We sold these weapons to Saddam Hussein. And do you know what? We were wrong about that. You know why? Because when I actually did the research on Donald Rumsfeld to find out exactly what had happened with those weapons of mass destruction, the United States didn't sell weapons of mass destruction to Saddam Hussein. What we did was we took Saddam Hussein's country off of the terrorist list, the terrorist watch list, which basically was created embargo so they could not get them, for a period of several months. During that period, that several-month period where those weapons of mass destruction were being banned from Iraq, those weapons of mass destruction were brought in. It wasn't brought in by the United States, you know. But the problem here is that, you know, as libertarians, we generally like to just say, well, where are the weapons of mass destruction? Well, we sold them to them. I think that the problem of is when we're always attacking neocons, people like Jennifer Rubin, people like Donald Rumsfeld, people like Dick Cheney, we don't understand what the real situation of the historical situation is.
Well, we did arm the Mujahideen, though, with weapons
that was in the 80s. That was
to kill American soldiers.
That was to defend against the Russians.
And often I would say this, though, too. Maybe you're correct on the intimate details of that particular point. You probably are.
And doesn't it diminish us to say this stuff?
No, it doesn't. In the sense, do you ever read Jennifer Rubin or what the neocons say about us? We blame America first. We hate this country. We're on the side of our enemies.
Is that untrue?
It is completely untrue.
You know, we've been
for the
hearing
vast
this
majority
week
of libertarians.
About how news articles in the near future are just mm-hmm. going to be written by computers. Mm-hmm. I think that Jennifer Rubin's pieces could be written by a computer because they're so predictable and cookie cutter at this mm-hmm. point. She just lobs out these emotional accusations.
Right.
Ian, are you telling me, do you agree with Jack that there are no libertarians who actually hate America, who blame America for every single problem in the world?
There are some people that oppose whatever the government is doing, not because of a consistent philosophy they hold, but because they just want to be contrarian jerks. And we should criticize those people.
There will always be a fringe minority of any movement, left, right, libertarian, independent, anything. That'll always exist.
Rand Paul is certainly not one of those people. And who does Jennifer Rubin attack all the time?
That's right.
She attacks Rand Paul.
Right. And she infers that that's the case with him.
Right.
And that's ridiculous.
And with libertarians generally. Now, here's an area where I think we could benefit from understanding how neocons think a bit more. There are some libertarians who, as Anthony Gregory pointed out, are calling for a so-called humanitarian intervention in Crimea against Russia. You and I aren't among them, even though people think we are, because we're criticizing Russia.
Right.
But I think the reason that's happened is because these people were anti-war during the Bush years, and now people are asking them, well, this would be humanitarian. Don't you want a humanitarian intervention? Don't you care about people? And they're saying, well, yeah, I guess I do have to support a humanitarian intervention. And so now there are a few people calling for war with Russia. But if they knew how neoconservative philosophy worked, they would have known this has always been the neoconservative justification. This is why people like McCain and Lindsey Graham use it, is that, oh, we have to, you know, the U.S. has to effectively act as a heavily armed global charity organization and fix everything everywhere at our expense.
And in the interest of nuance, but before we did this podcast, Jack, you said, you know, John McCain, Lindsey Graham, Jennifer Rubin, neocons. But you said Mitt Romney wasn't. Why not?
I don't think he's ideologically committed to policing the world. Do I think he had advisors that were ideologically committed? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's a guiding force. I think he's a businessman, somewhat of a technocrat, a very nice, decent man, a family man, personally. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't think he has any guiding conservative principles necessarily, other than just being a good businessman. He thought he'd be a better president than Obama. Mm-hmm. That's very different from a John McCain who wants to bomb Iran, who wants to go to Syria, Libya, Antarctica, Sweden, wherever the hell else he wants to go next. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is his mission in life. That's mm-hmm. very different. Lindsey Graham's the same way. Mitt Romney's not a neocon. Mm-hmm. Has he believed in some neocon foreign policy positions? He has. Mm-hmm. But it's not something that guides him every day. I think that's the distinction that more people need to make, especially libertarians who fall into that trap.
Yeah, well, I was concerned when I saw a lot of the infighting that was going on, because I saw the piece written from the Ron Paul Institute about Alexander McCubbin, someone who I consider a good friend and not a neocon in any way.
Not at all.
But he was posted under Neocon Watch. And to me, I think that, ladies and gentlemen, if we're going to be flinging this pejorative around, ladies and gentlemen, you better at least know what it means. And if Alexander McCubbin is a neocon, then so am I. You know, you're going to have to throw me in that briar patch. Because to me, I think that the problem lies with the lack of understanding of what a neocon truly is and the subtlety with which one can hold certain positions. And I'm actually going to throw out a big challenge to not just the people here on the podcast, but the people who are listening. I want to talk to you guys about the anarchy position. Because here's the real challenge to yourself that you've got to ask yourself if you consider yourself an anarchist, right? So you don't believe in borders, right? If you believe in open borders totally, then is intervention overseas really that big of a deal? And here's why I'm going to ask you that question. Because if liberty matters here in America, why doesn't it matter in Crimea? So if you're an anarchist and you don't believe in borders, shouldn't you be for toppling every government everywhere at all times? To me, it seems that philosophically, if you want to be consistent, you can't say, oh, as an anarchist, well, we don't care what happens overseas. I guess you can say it. But the philosophically consistent position as someone who believes in open borders is someone that you basically have to say that what happens in Crimea is terrible, and that Russia, as a big government, is being militarist, and the American government should intervene, perhaps. Maybe if you're an anarchist, then there is an argument for intervention. And
well, there's two problems here. And one is, yes, people should care about interventions by different foreign powers if they're consistently an opponent of intervention. Mm-hmm. But also, if you say it's within the American government's purview to settle any atrocity that's happening anywhere or fix any human rights abuse anywhere in the world.
Because borders don't matter.
Right. Well, regardless, if you hold that position for any reason, that is necessarily requires a blank check on the expansion of government. Mm-hmm. You're never going to fix all that stuff because humanity is not perfectible. You can't program us like nodes in a computer. So the U.S. government is going to be policing everything, everywhere, for all time, and taxing us, you know, out the wazoo to pay for it if you give them that moral blank check. So I don't think that position is consistent with coherent opposition to government power.
Well, I don't happen to think the anarchist position is that consistent anyway, and the reason why I say that is because Karl Marx saw this. He would have supported that, not just the intervention, but he would have supported America getting involved. The reason is because he wanted to see the capitalist system destroy itself. And so an anarchist, if you're an anarchist, why wouldn't you want the American government to do what it's going to do? Because that means that eventually that it will bankrupt ourselves and the system will collapse. So to be a consistent anarchist, you have to sort of buy into a lot of the Marxist ideology as well, which is one of the reasons why I'm not.
It depends on how you want to reduce government. You could say, I want to campaign to reduce government, or you could say, I want all this stuff to burn down, I guess, is kind of what you're talking about.
Yeah, that is what I'm talking about, and that happens to be why I think that it's inconsistent to be an anarcho, quote unquote, anarcho-capitalist, really, because, again, no borders and no government, you should be pushing for that as hard as you can. And if by bankrupting itself, by having a government bankrupt itself, is the fastest way to get the government to be destroyed, well, that seems to me to be the consistent anarchist position, but we can debate that. That's insider stuff. I want to finish this off, Jack, and I want you to give me your insight, because we're looking at Rand Paul as being number one in the polls, the front runner. Mm-hmm. And what scares me is that whenever you're the front runner, you never win. You're a target. But then they say, because the people who win the straw poll never win, And now Rand Paul has won the straw poll, I think, 2 years in a row.
Right.
And he's the front runner. He's the target. He's a bigger target than Chris Christie, which is kind of hard to say considering how big a target that guy is. Although, to give Governor Christie some credit, he's lost a bunch of weight. I guess he had lap band surgery recently, so he's on the slim. So what do you think we've got? What are our biggest challenges in the next 2 years if we are people who do care about the future of liberty in the short term and long term? People who, if we want to see Rand Paul get elected, what can we do as a strategy to counter people like Jennifer Rubin?
Well, you keep telling the truth. Look, if you read a Jennifer Rubin column, she'll say Rand Paul is out of step with Republicans on foreign policy, and then you'll see like a Gallup or Pew Research Center poll saying that 80% of conservative Republicans don't want to go to Syria.
Mm-hmm.
Well, who's out of step, Rand Paul or Jennifer Rubin? Mm-hmm. I mean, nobody takes that seriously.
Mm-hmm.
The point is not the focus on people who don't matter, like Jennifer Rubin, or the mm-hmm. conservatives aren't paying attention to, like her, and it's to look at things in a more broad sense. Mm-hmm. I think most Americans in this country, I don't care if it's foreign policy, domestic policy, don't agree with us on every intimate detail of what libertarian conservatism, that's what I call myself, is, but they agree with us more than they used to, and they agree with us more than ever, and I think going forward they'll agree with us even more, a year from now, or 2 years from now, or four. I think, conservatism itself needs to be more youthful, more contemporary, a little bit more sensitive in many ways towards others. I just think we have a lot of the answers for where America's heading, and people like Rand Paul represent that, people like Justin Amash represent that, and other people who are out there and those who are coming along whose names we don't know yet. And it's not just about politics, it's about the culture. I was ecstatic that Dallas Buyers Club got so much attention at the Oscars this year. That's one of the most libertarian movies I've seen in years.
I'm going to have to see that.
I saw it three times in the movie. I love it. It was the ideologue in me. The government was the unequivocal bad guy, and it was fantastic. Yeah. I loved it. But
cool.
That's just one small example. America, FreedomWorks did some research on this, is becoming more libertarian.
Mm-hmm.
Is it purely libertarian? No. Will it ever be purely libertarian? No. Will it be a lot more libertarian than it is right now? I think so. And we just have to keep doing what we're doing. And I would just, everybody with this Crimea stuff and everything, everybody that's talked about that debate, I've seen things that I agree with wholeheartedly and things that I disagree. From Ron Paul to McCobin to my friend Justin Ramond, all these people. I think Anthony Gregory's piece was one of the best. Let's try to hold it together as much as we can. This moment will pass, but that factionalization might be more permanent.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm more concerned about. We should debate. We should have differences. Any healthy movement does that. But don't act like each other are the enemy all the time. I just really hate that kind of stuff.
Right, yeah. I hate that. I hate the idea, if you disagree with Ron Paul, you are a neocon. We've got to get it together, ladies and gentlemen.
And to finish off what Jack said about Jennifer Rubin being out of touch, where are Americans the most libertarian? The area where the most people in the U.S. want to cut government by far is foreign aid. In other words, Americans are the opposite of Jennifer Rubin.
President Bush left office with a 22% approval rating,
yeah.
One of the lowest in American history, and she thinks that's the ideal Republican model.
Right.
You tell me who's out of step, her or Rand Paul.
Yeah. Our first president of the United States, George Washington, had a famous quote that said, "Liberty, when it begins to take root, is a plant of rapid growth." And I totally agree with that. And if you do as well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to give you a plug. We're giving away a replica copy of George Washington's flintlock pistol. It's sitting on the shelf right here behind me.
It is very cool.
It's a beautiful flintlock pistol, and it has moving parts. It doesn't actually fire, And the reason why I didn't want to get one of the actual firing flintlocks is because I want to be able to give it to anybody. You could be a kid, you can enter the contest. So if you want to win this beautiful replica of George Washington's flintlock pistol, then go to thelibertarianrepublic.com right now and give us your email. You'll be entered to win. You can enter from anywhere. You can be overseas, Australia, Timbuktu. It doesn't matter. You can enter the contest. I want to say thank you very much to Jack Hunter for joining us on the show, and my co-host Ian Hewitt, Ian the Intrepid Hewitt. Ladies and gentlemen, don't forget to come back every single day to your home for economic freedom at thelibertarianrepublic.com.